Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Raspis, the show Alternative Visions, where we talk about the dysfunctional U.S. and global economies and what's happening and what might be done. As you know, this show tries to focus on solutions, not just whining and moaning about the problem. And we have a guest today in which we're going to talk about a solution here that seems to be emerging. My guest is Jill Stein, who was recent candidate for president for the Green Party. But I'll introduce her properly shortly, and particularly the subject of today, which is the recently formed Green Shadow Cabinet. Important development, I think, here. And we'll talk about that a little bit shortly. But first, by way of intro and lead-in to our guest and our discussion on the Green Shadow Cabinet and its presidential candidate, which is Ms. Jill Stein, let me say a few things about the economy. Well, you know, as I try to do at every session we have, is give an update to listeners on what's happening with the deficit-cutting austerity, a.k.a. American style. And, of course, that still is continuing. Well, recent weeks, Obama proposed a initial unilateral $630 billion cut in Social Security and Medicare. And that's just the beginning. Okay. And then at the same time, he, in his budget, recently 2014 budget, takes effect next October, he proposed to restore $400 billion in defense spending cuts that were supposed to take place as part of the, quote, sequester cuts on March 1st. So restore $400 billion and offer $630 billion as a starter to try to entice the Republicans in Social Security Medicare cuts. And as I said, that's only the beginning. And what have the Republicans done in the House? Nada. Nothing. No response whatsoever. Well, gee, surprise, surprise. You think Obama would learn his lesson by now? These guys aren't going to negotiate with him. So why does he keep throwing more and more into the pot to try to entice them to do so? Well, you know, I used to think maybe this guy's just an incompetent negotiator, having been a union negotiator for decades myself. You know, I would have thrown him off of the bargaining team. But, you know, he keeps doing it. Maybe he's not so incompetent. Maybe, you know, there's a collusion going on here, I'm beginning to think. Could be either or. My forthcoming article is, by the way, From Grand Bargain to Grand Collusion. And if you want to read it, it'll be published in magazine shortly. But if you want to read it, go to my website. Just Google me, Jack Rasmus, R-A-S-M-U-S. And my website is Kyklos Productions, K-Y-K-L-O-S Productions.com. Too complicated. Just Google me and go there and click on the Articles tab, and you'll read From Grand Bargain to Grand Collusion. Also, you can also take a look at my blog, jackrasmus.com, where I've been writing about the growing euro crisis, euro banking crisis, and the slowdown of the U.S. economy. So, you know, the dysfunctional U.S. economy here. We're still cutting deficits, and guess what happens? Well, we're slowing down. The economy is slowing down. No growth in the fourth quarter, which is actually negative growth. And then what did we just get last week for first quarter GDP numbers in 2013? Well, we got 2.5. But, you know, much of that, over half of that, is business inventories and a short-term stocking of business inventories, which is going to collapse in this second quarter. I predict this second quarter, April to June, will be much, much less, probably around 1%, it's beginning to look like, because business spending is going down, manufacturing, factory goods is declining, even new construction is declining. States are rushing to cut taxes to attract companies, race to the bottom. Jobs last month, only 88,000. We'll see Friday if that's repeated. I think it's going to be much less than 150,000 necessary to just absorb new people into the labor market. And then once again, I think GDP is going to be much less than the 2.5. We're bouncing along the bottom and continuing to do that for 4 years now. Okay, dysfunctional U.S. economy, which is leads us to our current topic here. Right, I'm talking about my guest and the formation recently of what is called the Green Shadow Cabinet. Okay, Jill Stein is my guest. She was a Green Party's 2012 candidate for President of the U.S. She's a mother, physician, and pioneering environmental health advocate. She has led many, many initiatives promoting healthy communities, green economies, stronger democracy, campaign finance reform, green jobs, right? Et cetera, et cetera. A long history of activism. I like activists. I'm not so great on talking head intellectuals, but I like activists, and I like Jill Stein. And by the way, we now have the formation of what is called the Green Shadow Cabinet. And that's what we want to talk about, because that cabinet is really a powerful-looking grouping of realistic people here with solutions. And I'm going to let Jill talk more about the Green Shadow Cabinet. She is the presidential candidate for the Green Shadow Cabinet, but there's like some 80-some people. It's a comprehensive cabinet, and, you know, it's not unique to the U.S. As I understand, in the U.K. and France and elsewhere, Green Shadow Cabinets are being formed to provide pragmatic, realistic solutions to these failed policies that 5 years now have only bailed out the bankers and the CEOs and speculators and stock and bond investors, and the rest of us are still languishing 5 years. I mean, how much more time do we need for confirmation that their policies only work for them and not for us? Well, we need some other policies. Jill?
Exactly. Thank you so much, Jack. And thank you for that magnificent overview, as you always provide, of kind of the hype out there and the spin that's trying to get people to think things are working, but people know from their everyday lives, with one of two Americans, you know, in poverty or heading towards it, 37 million students, effectively indentured servants, 9 out of 10 jobs, according to the Department of Labor, 9 out of 10 jobs that are coming online over the next decade are going to continue to be these low-wage, insecure jobs that don't require a college degree and don't pay college wages. Americans cannot afford their health care, even if they are lucky enough to have health insurance, with a new report out just last week saying that something like 80 million working-age Americans, that's nearly half of working-age Americans, haven't gone to get their health care or get their prescription filled, even when they have health insurance, because they can't afford, you know, the costs that come with these unaffordable health care plans. So, you know, it's like the meltdown is happening all around us, yet what we hear out of Washington, D.C., and even our state capitals, is pretty much business as usual. They're talking to the banking class. Congress got busy last week to deal with, you know, oh, no, the crisis of plane delays, you know, from the sequester, this brilliant idea of Barack Obama for dealing with the non-existent debt crisis. We cut these $85 billion from the national budget this year, and that hammer is starting to hit. And what did they choose to fix? You know, the delays at the airport, as opposed to the 100,000 homeless people who won't have a place to go, the million people who are going to lose access to health care through community health centers, you know, the tens of thousands who will no longer be eligible for Head Start, the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of education support for low-income children, et cetera. You know, the meltdown is happening, but fortunately, the rebellion is in full swing. I'm glad to report, because I'm I have the great pleasure and good fortune of being able to go out and talk to people all around the country. And I've basically been on the road for about the last 6 weeks doing that. The rebellion is in full swing, especially among young people, and demographics is destiny, because the young people are replacing the older folks whose political allegiances, shall we say, have become increasingly obsolete. And we got the solutions. You know, we not only have growing numbers of people who have thrown in the towel on the political establishment, we have the solutions. So this Green Shadow Cabinet puts some of the major magnificent proponents of these solutions into a place where we can see them, and it brings us together across the many issues that are of critical concern, from employment, the policies at the Federal Reserve, immigration, health care, energy. We have a Department of Peace as well as a Secretary of State. And what was so exciting to me was to see how people just came out of the woodwork, the luminaries across the spectrum of peace, justice, democracy, healthcare, housing, finance, you name it, banking. The key advocates for the policies that we need and which are ready to go right now came out of the woodwork to say, yeah, this is just what we need. We need a visible and unified force that's advocating for the solutions that we need right now. So it's there to debunk the, let's see, how shall I put it nicely, you know, the baloney that's coming out of the federal government, coming out of Washington, and putting forward the real solutions that we have right now, starting with job creation now for 25 million people that can put everyone back to work in a way that not only jumpstarts the economy, but transforms it. And you have written, as I must mention, that we are honored to have you, Jack Rasmus, as our Federal Reserve chairman. And you wrote a magnificent op-ed piece that was part of our launch last week about how the monetary policies coming out of the Fed are a key part of the problem, and a readily available solution is there for the asking. You know, instead of giving away $3 trillion in this quantitative easing, which you so magnificently summarized, has basically just blown up the gambling and the recklessness and the bubbles coming out of the stock market and the big banks and big corporations. Instead of just giving them $3 trillion to continue their waste, fraud, and abuse, we could be doing much better with our monetary policy and making credit available to the people who really need it, and using the Federal Reserve policies to actually jumpstart a real recovery. So,
now, as
you know,
I understand,
you're one of the wonderful examples of the people who've come forward with the real solutions that are ready to go now.
I understand this Green Shadow Cabinet was formed just a few weeks ago. Can you tell us a few of the people who are in it, so people, listeners, know this is a very serious development here? This is not fly-by-nighters. This is people with real ideas. Who's in the GSC, and how will it work?
Great. So the Green Shadow Cabinet basically grew out of our presidential campaign. You know, back in the last election, one out of every two voters was basically going to sit it out for being wise enough to know that the establishment parties were not going to, put forward the kinds of solutions that we need. So we... during the race, we had hoped to create the cabinet because so many people were coming forward you know, as a sort of unified opposition to the broken establishment policies and solutions. During a campaign, it's hard to actually do anything except run the campaign. So it didn't happen then, but in the aftermath, many of us got together and said, we need to keep this going. You know, this is sort of, this is the source of hope and excitement. So it includes people like, for example, Margaret Flowers, the pediatrician who was the PNHP Congressional Fellow, that is Physicians for National Health Plan, and has been just an eloquent spokesperson and advocate for Medicare for All, which is how we need to fix Medicare, is by making it available to everybody. Anne Wright is the Secretary of State. Anne Wright was a former ambassador, actually, to Afghanistan under George Bush. She was one of maybe two people who resigned from the Bush administration when he attacked Iraq. And she has basically ever since been an ambassador for peace, and she is now our Secretary of State, really acting on behalf of people, peace, and the planet, and for the Green Shadow Cabinet. We also have a Department of Peace with David Swanson, who is, he was actually the press secretary for Dennis Kucinich during his presidential campaign, and is an author of many books about peace and war. I can mention Ellen Brown, one of the key advocates for public banking, for actually nationalizing our banks and making them public utilities that serve the public interest. She is the head of Treasury. Richard Wolff, a very well-known economist like the one I'm talking with, Jag Rasmus, he has stepped up to be the chair of the Council of Economic Advisors. Gar Alperovitz, another well-known economist who actually began the Evergreen Cooperatives in Cleveland, which is a wonderful worker-owned cooperative that is sort of creating the U.S. Alternative to the Mondragon cooperatives over in Spain, a really wonderful experiment in worker ownership. He is a special advisor on the new economy. The list goes on and on. Harvey Wasserman, who's one of the key proponents of solar energy and a major opponent of nuclear power, is helping to keep the San Onofre, very dangerous nuclear power plant sitting on top of earthquake fault line, with all the hazards and liabilities of the Fukushima plant you've got going in on our own shores here at San Onofre and many other U.S. nuclear power plants, for example. So, you know, we've got a very exciting crew that covers the waterfront for the solutions that we need, all the more powerful for being part of a collective voice that's all working together. American politics, as you know, and advocacy is typically issue by issue, which creates a divide and conquer landscape. And people's energies are divided and movements are divided. And what we're doing with the Green Shadow Cabinet is providing a framework for all of us to come together across movements to say that the basic idea here is people, peace, and the planet. We have the resources, we have the know-how, we have the vision. What we don't have is simply the political clout. It's time, you know, for we the people to stand up and show that we have the right stuff and to build the movement at the grassroots level and at the level of federal policy to show that we are capable of governing, we are capable of charting the way forward now to solve the very critical and urgent problems that we have right now.
Where can listeners go, Jill? We're going to make this note for listeners a couple times before the show's over. Where can they go to find out more about the Green Shadow Cabinet, its positions, its policy recommendations, and where they might be able to link up with it? Give us some informational context.
Great. So go to Green Shadow Cabinet. That's all one word. Green Shadow Cabinet, one word. .us. And there on the homepage, you'll see a whole set of op-eds and statements that we've put out in the basically 1 week that we have been formally in existence. This was several months in the making, but we've basically gone public as of Earth Day last week. You'll see, for example, a statement by our Secretary of Immigration, Gloria Menezes Sandoval, who is an activist in the immigrant rights movement, head of an organization based on the West Coast, actually. And she has a beautiful statement for today, which is May Day, which is International Workers' Day. And she has a beautiful statement from the Green Shadow Cabinet about what really should be the goals of our immigration policy, which are very different from the bill being pushed through Congress and supported by the president right now, which she says actually should be called the Border Militarization National ID Corporate and Prison Subsidy and Family Separation Act. That, in very straightforward terms, is what national immigration policy continues to be, even with all the hype and lip service being given to citizenship. What's really going on, if you look at this 844-page document, is not good news whatsoever. So here we have, one of the statements on the front page of the Green Shadow Cabinet is really, sort of telling it like it is. Where is immigration policy going under the bipartisan duopoly in Congress and in Washington, D.C.? You'll see a statement on the recent drone conference, a conference to resist the drones held in Syracuse, New York, earlier, actually over the weekend, making the point that this is just plain bad policy. Bad policy. Pakistan, in Pakistan, which has been sort of the breeding ground for the drone war, 80% of people now consider the U.S. the enemy, not the friend. And this has been shown to happen other places where the drones are being used as well. So this is a dreadfully counterproductive policy, even if the ethics and the morality were not so horrific as they are. But in addition, it's doing exactly the wrong thing for American public policy and American standing in the court of public opinion around the world. You'll see a whole bunch of wonderful op-eds on really all the key issues, and then you can also go inside and find out about who's in the cabinet, who are the members. For example, just to name a couple others, Ajamu Baraka, who is the on the cabinet, serves as the public intervener for human rights. He is one of the major African American proponents of economic rights as human rights, calling for a bill of rights that includes the right to a job, the right to an affordable home, the right to education through graduate school, higher education, which is essentially tuition free.
Secretary of Labor in the Shadow Cabinet, given that this is May 1st, late International Labor Day.
The Secretary of Labor is a very active member of the labor community named Richard Monhay, who is actually a vice president of Workers United and SEIU, a union at the very forefront of the fight against the attack on workers, especially in the Midwest. And he's been especially active in this organization, Workers United, which is working to organize low-wage workers, and was very active, for example, I believe, in the Walmart, the recent Walmart worker walkout, where you saw workers all over the country standing up for their right to form unions and for their right to decent wages for respect at the workplace.
Where is the GSC going? What can you tell us about plans over the next 90 to 180 days? What does the GSC want to do other than make statements and op-eds and so forth, which I think is extremely important, because one of our problems today, excuse me, I'm going to go off on a tangent here, one of our problems today is that everyone is just force-fed these through the media these solutions that don't work. People aren't don't have an opportunity to hear other solutions that may work, and I believe will work a lot better. I mean, like Ellen Brown, public banking, and so forth. You know, the solutions are not so difficult. They're not rocket science, but they're not getting a hearing anywhere. So, you know, I don't want to downplay the importance of these op-ed statements, and I want listeners to go to the website and read them and get a head full of alternative solutions that do work. But other than just position papers and where we're going and so forth, what we believe in, what's our mission, et cetera, what's being practically discussed as to activities by the GSC in order to reach out to people?
Great, and thanks for making the point, because we don't want to just be a bunch of talking heads. As you say, it's really important to have these policies, and one that I have to give a shout out to is ending student debt. You know, instead of bailing out the banks to the tune of $85 billion a month, how about instead we bail out the students? Because at that rate, we can end student debt, you know, in a little more than a year. And this would be a bailout which would actually be very productive and would release enormous productive and economic capacity for our communities and for our economy. So there's a real point to putting these good solutions out on the table. But we're also an activist cabinet. So at this drone protest, for example, over the weekend, there were five members of our cabinet, many of the members of our foreign affairs, that is, Anne Wright, our Secretary of State, David Swanson, our Secretary of Peace, Leah Bolger, who is our Secretary of Defense, a former, I believe, colonel herself, in the Navy, if I'm not mistaken, who was a recent past president of Veterans for Peace. She was there. One of our members, Bruce Gagnon, who's actually our Secretary for Space, to prevent, or let me put it this way, to maintain peaceful uses of space and to prevent the use of space for basically warfare and the security / drone state. He was actually arrested in the course of this demonstration. And this is what our cabinet is about. We are not just talking heads. We really want to exemplify what a government of, by, and for the people is all about. It's not just saying the right thing, it's doing the right thing, and it's standing up for what needs to be done. In June, many of us will be at the Left Forum, which is a big conference of critics from the left of the establishment politics and the establishment economy and the ruling elite. Will be meeting there, and for those who are interested, you can find out more at the website at greenshadowcabinet.us. So we'll be
meeting
with people there.
That's in New York City.
Helping to build the movement. Go ahead.
That's in New York City, right? A lot of listeners here on the show, I'm sure, from New York. So if they want to hear some discussions by Green Shadow Cabinet folks, it's right there in their hometown.
Exactly. And I want to just stress that we will, we have only begun in the Shadow Cabinet. And part of what we're doing now is developing sort of our key priorities. And among them will be mobilization events. Because at the end of the day, it really takes a social movement on the ground to create transformational change. And we know that from history. We know that during, for example, the abolition of slavery, there was a social movement for abolition, and then there was that political voice, which we are trying to provide in the Green Shadow Cabinet. We provide the voice for that movement. And at the time of abolition, at the time of, for example, the labor movement, the real progress that was made in the labor movement, you had political voices through, for example, the socialists and the progressive, the labor parties, etc., as well as the social movement on the ground. But it really takes both. And our intent is to provide the policies that enable the achievement of this social vision. But we see it working hand in hand, a political voice together with the power of the movement. You know, the movement, the student movement, which is alive and well, fighting to roll back tuition, fighting to roll back this climate suicide, which is being inflicted particularly on the younger generation right now. There are these movements that are fighting fracking, that are fighting for decent wages, that are fighting for jobs, and the name of the game here is to strengthen these movements on the ground. And we'll be coming out with an agenda soon to let people know where we'll be and to help shine the light on some of the key social movements that are absolutely essential if we are going to survive the economic, the climate, the health, the security, you name it, the crises that are escalating around us right now. It's very important. We need to turn this breaking point that we're at for people, the planet, the economy, our democracy. It's all in crisis. And we need to turn that breaking point into a tipping point to take back our democracy and the future we deserve. And to do that, we need that social movement on the ground, and we need a liberated political voice that can amplify that social movement and actually get traction.
Let's hold that thought. We need to take a break here for the station, but when you come back, let's talk more about priorities, events, and agenda. Where the GSC is thinking we should go in terms of priorities and events, mobilizing events, as you say. Just give us a brief preview of some things that might be under discussion here. So let's take a break. This is Alternative Visions. We'll be back very shortly. My guest, Jill Stein, president's candidate for the Green Shadow Cabinet. Okay? This is Jack Rasmus, your host for Alternative Visions. My guest today is Jill Stein, and we're talking about the newly formed Green Shadow Cabinet. I want to emphasize, this is not a new top-down political party. This is an attempt to, from the grassroots, to organize, mobilize the grassroots based on new ideas and new solutions, new proposals, a whole different approach to the economic, social, political crisis we're facing in this country. And Jill is right. It's a multiple crisis. It's not just the economy. We can't get it going. Everyone else slipping into low-paying part-time jobs and, you know, the economy just not recovering, and globally, the whole world economy is slowing once again, while the rich continue to get their free money from the Federal Reserve to the tune of tens of trillions, by the way. QE is just $3 trillion of direct money. Indirectly, you know, all these companies and banks and shadow banks can go get zero-interest loans. Gee, wouldn't it be nice if students could go and get zero-interest loans? Let's refinance all these student loans at 6% and 8% that are just you know, killing students and putting them in indentureship for the rest of their lives. Why couldn't they just roll over those loans to zero interest loans? We're giving that to the banks, aren't we? You know, and in fact, it would just take you 6 months, and you could get rid of all those 6-8% loans, and it would be zero interest loans students would be sitting on, just as the banks. We've been doing it to the banks for 5 years now. Well, we're just 6 months of this, and you solve your student debt problem, right? Or how about expunging some of this debt the way they've written off some of this bank debt for student loans that were from the private sector, you know, these parent student loans that were 8-10% loans, gouging people that there's, you know, students are still carrying and their families are still carrying too. The solutions are so simple. You know, it's just political opposition here that's blocking all this. And I hope to also bring on some other guests here in subsequent weeks from the Green Shadow Cabinet. Ellen Brown, you know, who's the Secretary of the Treasury, a strong proponent of public banking. And, you know, Federal Reserve Chair myself, obviously the Fed has to work closely with the Treasury, so maybe Ellen and I will discuss some specifics here. I'd like to get Richard Wolff on, Chair of the Council of Economic Advisors for the Green Shadow Cabinet, and talk to him. Ann Wright and Leah Bolger about, you know, what do we do? We're spending $1 trillion a year on defense. $1 trillion, listeners, not $600 billion, $1 trillion when you add it all up. And, gee, what could we do with $1 trillion? Quite a bit, you know. Margaret Flowers, Medicare for All, the only solution to Obamacare is Medicare for All. You know, it's just coming out now, the Obamacare. How are businesses going to game the system? I'll tell you how. They're going to reduce full-time workers to part-time, and thereby get out of having to pay you know, that penalty if they don't have health care. Yes, we already have gone from 2 million to 9 million involuntary part-time workers. We're going to have millions more. They're going to cut your hours even more to avoid paying premiums. That's what's coming, everybody.
Exactly. And they rely on this game of divide and conquer. They want you to pick your worst crisis, get focused on that, you know, so that we're all split among the many crises that are afflicting us.
Oh, and you're talking to my pet peeve, Jill, and that is the problem with progressive people in this country is they've been focusing on single issues.
Yes.
Everybody's got their single issue. It's so easy to divide and conquer.
Yes.
What we've got to do is unite into a unified movement and get off of this single issue stuff and support each other's issues. And there's no other way except doing it in political organization. You
exactly.
just cannot do it.
And I think that is their other secret weapon. You know, one is divide and conquer. The other one is convince people that they are powerless when, in fact, we are powerful. We have the numbers. We have the solutions. We have the vision. We have the courage. And they're, you know, where they really get people, in my experience, is this thing of, oh, well, we don't dare ask for that. That's too much to ask for, you know, that I could actually, like, have an education as well as a job and health care. You know, oh, my God, we can't, you know, we can't do that. we don't dare to stand up. But in fact, you know, and then they get you to support sort of the lesser of the disasters. But in fact, the difference between those two disasters is not enough to save your life, because the jobs are going. You know, it's not enough to save your job. It's not enough to save your income or your house or the climate for your kid to live in, because that doomsday, you know, it gets closer and closer. Now they're talking about 2050 as the time that we may be as much as 4 degrees centigrade warm. That's like four times as much of the warming as we have right now. So it's an absolute disaster. The ice sheets will be melted. Sea level will be coming up, you know, probably tens of feet. You know, there's a lot of people on the planet now who intend to be here in 2050. If not us, then our kids or our nieces and nephews or neighbors' kids. So, you know, it's no longer indefinite in the future. We're not going to survive what they got coming down. So it's really, you want to be afraid of the right things. Be afraid. Be very, very afraid of where we are going under this bipartisan, co-opted, Wall Street-sponsored political system. Don't be afraid of standing up. You know, this is the time for the politics of courage. You all get us together. That's what, you know, in my view, that's really what a political party is. It's a coalition across issues, across time, across geography that's capable of getting us to critical mass. So it's all about just reject that propaganda that tells you we are powerless. In fact, we are powerful.
I absolutely agree with you, and it's got to start at the grassroots. It's got to be a movement first, and a party emerges out of that movement. You cannot have a bunch of intellectuals declare top-down, we are a party, and expect that you got to go out and build the movement along all of these different fronts. And just another comment here on health care. You know, I talked about how the crisis is coming. They're going to cut your hours of work to get out of Obamacare. Another thing that's going to happen is, and it's already happening, employer-provided health care plans. Employers are going to dump their health insurance plans in 2014. They're going to give everybody, or try to, you know, negotiate, here's a flat amount, we're not paying any more for it. Go out and get your own private health insurance. That's what's coming. A collapse of the employer health insurance plan. And you know what? That's George W. Bush's health savings accounts. Privatization plan. It's the same thing. Obamacare is going to collapse. It's not for the reasons the right wing is talking about, but because it does not solve the health care cost problem.
I live
Medicare
under Romney Care.
Medicare for All is the only solution to that.
It,
you know,
absolutely is, and you know, this isn't just a matter of conjecture. We have Obamacare here in Massachusetts. We've had it now for 6 years. We just have a different name. We call it Romney Care, but it's the same plan. And the studies have actually documented here, and that means studies by Blue Cross Blue Shield and Harvard School of Public Health. They've actually documented that the cost goes up for people who are so unfortunate as to actually get sick. You know, they discover that these pieces of paper are not what they were made out to be. You feel good having your piece of insurance paper until you get sick, and then you see that, in fact, it doesn't cover you. There are enormous holes, and, in fact, people who are chronically ill say, studies show, that those who are chronically ill have less access to care and are paying more out of pocket than they were prior. So, you know, plus our health care costs continue to skyrocket in Massachusetts, and health care now devours about half of our state budget. So this doesn't work.
Yes. Right.
And it never did, and it will not going forward. So, you know, we don't need going there.
Right. We could talk all day about the problems, and we do, you know, on this show and other shows, but we're past, I believe, talking about the crisis. I mean, it's time to start doing something about the crisis. That's why I tell people on my show, get off your butts. Go do something. something. Try something, but get out there and do something. Stop complaining, moaning, and whining about the problem. It's time to go out and do something. And the Green Shadow Cabinet is a ray of hope, I think. Tell us what's coming up in terms of agenda and maybe mobilization events. Hey. What's the strategy here of the GSC to bring these different single issue mobilization movements together?
Well, you know, the plans are in under discussion right now, and we'll have more details out about them soon. But I can tell you a couple of things that we are focused on immediately. So, for example, you know, with the budget cuts hitting hard now, there will be actually a march from Philadelphia to Washington, and this is being organized right now by the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign that my running mate, Sherry Hunkela, was one of the founders of. They are organizing a Poor People's Economic Human Rights March from Philadelphia to Washington. This is on May 18th, arriving on May 24th, calling for stopping the cuts, calling for living wage jobs, for green jobs to stop the assault on workers' rights, quality health care for all, and to stop closing our schools. So it's sort of a community rights agenda. People can find out more about that at greenshadowcabinet.us. Also, if you go to the site, you can subscribe, and there's a you know, there's a menu you can just click on at the top that allows you to sign up for a newsletter, which comes about once a week, that'll keep you posted on what's coming up that would be worth your while, and it'll also provide the policy solutions and the reframing of current events, you know, in a way that's really empowering and not disempowering. So you can tune in and become part of the network, and stay tuned for other events coming up. In addition to this first march on Washington, there are certainly big events that are going to take place, because the lid is going to blow in many ways. On the jobs issue, things are not getting better, shall we say. They're going to keep getting worse. And labor is just, I think, chomping at the bit, because organized labor has been reluctant to criticize and has been, quiet. But the rank and file are really increasingly in breakaway mode. So I just say sort of stay tuned for perhaps some bigger events on the horizon where we begin to see labor also organizing out in the street to demand, jobs and good pay, and to restore these cuts, for example, to unemployment insurance, which has been cut substantially as part of the sequester. So just stay tuned on the jobs front. On student debt, there is also a real storm brewing, because, again, things are not getting better. Students are really feeling the crisis with the unemployment hitting them hard and their debts continuing to rage. And a third area to stay tuned for is climate, because Obama is very likely to approve the Keystone Pipeline, which is essentially a death sentence on the climate. And I think we're going to see a substantial protest movement that really starts to break out, perhaps as soon as the next few weeks. So these are some of the areas where the shadow cabinet will be, amplifying the voices of the grassroots for the solutions on the ground that we need right now.
So go to greenshadowcabinet.us, and you will there be able to sign up for the newsletter, where listeners, you'll be able to see what's coming up in terms of events and activities that you can join in on. Let me add as well, there's an event coming up. You talked about labor and at the grassroots beginning to stir here. The Emergency Labor Network that I've worked with here is holding a conference in Rutgers University here, and this is sort of an invited-only conference of leaders of different unions and so on and so forth. This has been brewing. The most progressive elements of local unions and so forth are getting together, talking about how do we push the labor movement to actually do something in terms of defending against the Social Security, Medicare, and other cuts that are devastating. And people don't realize how much is this. This is really going to hit when they do cut Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. But anyway, that May 10th at Rutgers University, Emergency Labor Network, suggest if you're interested, contact it, although it's an invite-only conference at this point. But they're talking about we really need to get the labor movement community together for a march on Washington in August. Martin Luther King groups and so forth, minority groups are talking about this, and labor's talking about this. August, March on Washington. Keep your antennae up for that possibility of an action.
And let me underscore that, Jack. I'm really glad you bring that up, because this is a wonderful conference, and it's a wonderful network. And one of the very exciting things about this network, not only that it's really pushing the envelope for organized labor, but also that it is it's very unifying, and it's reaching out beyond the usual labor confines to also work with the climate advocates. And many of the members of this Emergency Labor Network, for example, have stood up to oppose the Keystone Pipeline and to point out that at the end of the day, after sacrificing, you know, our water supplies and our climate and clean air and all that's at risk with this tar sands development, at the end of the day, there will be 20 permanent jobs created. And for that, we're sacrificing, you know, water supplies for millions of people, putting them at risk, and putting our climate at risk. So it's really exciting that this Emergency Labor Network really is thinking bigger, thinking outside the box, and beginning to build these broader coalitions. Because the minute we bring together labor, climate, and students, we've won.
Plus minorities, big factor here. When they see this immigration bill clarified a little bit, as Gloria Sandoval has pointed out, this is a business, pro-business, not really pro-immigrant solution coming out of this immigration bill in Congress. All the issues are there. You know, the big task, I believe, is uniting people.
Exactly.
That's the task, you know. There's no lack of issues and problems, and no lack of discontent. I think, people ask, well, why aren't American people stirring? I think there's so much anger and discontent out there, but they don't see where they can go to unify. There's certainly not the two wings of the one party that's ruling this country now. And then you see everybody, the labor movement leadership, they're sitting on their butts. All they do is talk. They don't do anything because they don't want to aggravate their political friends in the Democratic Party, who throw them crumbs, and they're satisfied with crumbs because, the guys at the top, they're well off. It's not hurting them any. You know, it's not like, you're a janitor in L.A. and you're struggling to survive. You know, that's not an issue for them. Or you're a student, you graduate with a degree and you get a 20-hour part-time job. No, they don't have a problem. It's the rest of us have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You really, pe- people need to see a place to go where they can express their anger and their discontent. That's what's lacking here in the U.S., and that's what the Green Shadow Cabinet is so promising about, I think, if it can unite these single issues and discontent so people can come to a common source and express their protest and express their discontent. And if you can have a vision of something different and better, you know, I was a union organizer for decades. And thing I can tell you, the first thing, if you're going to organize people, you got to say, here's the vision, here's the end game, this is where we're trying to get and what we're going to try to do. If you can't give people that vision, working folks aren't going to step out and take a risk if they don't know where the heck you're going.
Exactly.
You know, and you got to have the vision to develop the strategy. The strategy comes next. How do you get from the crisis now to that vision? Well, that's called the strategy. People want to see how you're going to do it, right? I mean, real people, serious people, can't afford to take big risks. They want to know, where are you going? Is it real? Is it realizable? How are you going to get there? Oh, okay, that strategy makes sense. And then you can talk about tactics. The problem with Occupy, I think, was they jumped into tactics. You know, Occupy, which was good, a great courage. I commend those people for their courage. I commend those people for their energy and their desire and so forth. But, folks, you got to have a strategy. You got to have a vision. You got to have a program. Green Shadow Cabinet, folks. Thank you, Jill, so much. And we're going to try to get, Richard Wolf and Ellen Brown and others on this show and talk about more specifics. But go to greenshadowcabinet.us, folks. And as I always say, get off your butts. All right. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Jack. Great to
see you. Bye-bye.